Hey, everyone.
Before you check out the new Game of Owns episode that you're about to listen to, you should check out our new podcast. It's called It Really Makes You Think.
We don't have a start over. You can find us at itreallymakesyouthink.com. We don't really have a swaggy tagline. I don't know what to say. We're making an ad for our own show. We're making an ad for our own show about a different show. Okay, we have to be. It has to be just, short, sweet, and to the point.
All you have to do is look up It Really Makes You Think on any podcast player, or go to itreallymakesyouthink.com, which will take you to our YouTube page, because it is a video podcast.
We're having a lot of fun doing it.
We're doing it on video. So, I mean, buckle up. Through the gloom of night, the dead men flew, raining down upon the city streets. The riper corpses would fall to pieces in the air and burst when they came smashing down onto the bricks, scattering worms and maggots and worse things. Others would bounce against the sides of pyramids and towers, leaving smears of blood and gore to mark the places where they'd struck.
Huge as they were, the Incas trebuchets did not have the range to throw their grisly burdens deep into the city. Most of the dead were landing just inside the walls or slamming off barbicans, parapets, or defensive towers. With the six sisters arrayed in a rough crescent around Marine, every part of the city was being struck, save only the river districts to the north.
Welcome to the podcast, everyone.
Welcome to the Winds of Winter.
One of the best chapter openings I've read. What about you?
It's pretty good. George R. R. Martin is good at this kind of thing.
Yeah.
I feel like he's really, really good about these opening paragraphs and opening lines, really setting the vibe here.
Reading this chapter, Barristan 1, it felt like, I don't know if it was just the whiteness of the ebook I was reading it off of, just the crispness and the detail of the text, or if it was the mathematical perfection of seemingly what Barristan 1 ended up becoming now in my third reread before the podcast today. It just seemed like, aha, everything has led to this. This all makes sense, at least for this window inside of Barristan's life. We didn't get a full account of the second chapter. I mean, what would we call it? What's the official? They call it just a fan. Everyone's calling it a fan account of the, a fan beholding of the fan.
Yeah, reading. Or like a fan summary. Because yeah. There's no transcript, so it's just like a fan summary.
I wonder why someone didn't turn the voice memo app on their phone when that was happening.
I don't know. I don't know what year was it?
I think it was in 2013.
But there might be some rules around that. I don't know. I wasn't there, so I couldn't tell you. But if you're sitting in the audience and George R. R. Martin's like, I'm about to be reading something, I feel like my brain would be going a million places.
Oh, definitely. But that's why I would be suspicious. That's the second Barristan Selmy chapter that we've gotten released so far. And he did both Barristan chapters at Boscombe, both Barristan chapter readings he did at Boscombe. So There's probably a recording of it somewhere, but it's probably someone who's close to the sci-fi and fantasy community and is getting some sort of sick pleasure off of having it recorded and not releasing it to people. Yeah, I guess. I respect that person if that's what the deal is. The fan account was really detailed, and it carried emotion in the right places, which I found to be a little bit, I was like, this is interesting. Specifically the description of the spears and the way that they were set in perfect formation. I've been waiting for a fantasy story, whether it's a TV show, a movie. It used to only be movies, but now I can say whether it's a TV show doing it or whether a book or movies, a formation where the cavalry is running from one side into spears. But like, let's improve on what they did in Braveheart and inside the corners of all of our daydreams. George finally found it. He put it together. The spear that's at the knee level, then at the shoulder level, I can't remember what the levels were, but the way he described it was perfect.
It's kind of interesting though, because Barristan 1 is this build up to a battle that we've pretty much been we've been knowing is coming. And then we get the beginnings of this battle essentially through a summary. And so it feels like when you're reading them and you can read the summary in all the places where you can find it. Where do we get everything?
Google.
Yeah, Google.
Great, talking thank about you. Wars and Politics of Ice and Fire.
Yes.
The ultimate Winds of Winter resource that our buddy Jeff put together.
That's what I was talking about specifically, but Google also works. Mm-hmm. I'm saying as you're reading through Barristan 1 of Winds of Winter, and we're on the crest of this major battle, and then we get to the fan summary, which is very well put together and has a lot of great detail that we otherwise wouldn't have. It's a jarring moment to be thrust into battle or the beginnings of this battle through an account that isn't totally accurate and that we can only speculate what things do or don't mean about these paragraphs. And so it's kind of an interesting experience to have something legit or seemingly legit and then have something, not to say it's not legit, but you know what I'm trying to say?
Right.
Something that's just like a recollection.
But it has, like I said, some details. Some
for sure.
Direct quotes, some stuff that's
better
stuck
job
out.
Than I would have done.
Yeah, no, they did a really good job. I don't know if I trust. I think that this just might be an elaborate ruse by George R. R. Martin. That's why, like, there's certain little highlights of quotes from certain places specifically from it.
I mean, my real thought is that a fan summary is dumb because it's like not real.
But it feels so real in certain places, very specifically. So how much can we really rely on it is the question.
That's what I'm trying to say.
I'm going to read that snippet about the spears.
Hold on, link to fan. Are we still looking for who this is?
Is it? Well, I thought that you decided or found that it was... I just trust what you said. I didn't double check your accuracy.
Oh, I didn't really. I just saw one person say it was multiple people. But
it's kind of like a circular... It's like all linking to each other.
That's what I'm saying is like, I can't really find anything definitive.
The choice is yours. Do you believe that Barristan 2 is even close to what actually happens then?
Do I think that Barristan 2 is us going into battle? Yeah. Do I think we can put any weight onto specifics? No. I think there's a couple highlights, like high points that we can put in here, like Greyjoy is coming at the end, the fact that the battle is happening, but I don't, like, who's to say?
I love the detail also about thinking lowly of the Second Sons. After he had witnessed the Stormcrows riding into battle and cheering for Daario and having that kind of like geeky thing to say about Stormcrows fly, and he thought that he would never again doubt the valor of sellswords. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a fine little detail that set up the Greyjoys arriving and just added another layer of sort of being relieved and another last minute sort of turn of the mind away from a potential victory and to make it feel a little bit more twisted. And then to find that the Second Sons were actually being at some level valorous, and they were not only engaged, and that's why they couldn't arrive or they didn't arrive to help it until that point, but they're wrapped up with Victarion Greyjoy and his dudes on the shore, which is so much more meaningful and storied than we could have imagined if it would have been a normal conflict. It's just raised a level, and I liked that the person that either made that up or the person that was transcribing
they made it up
from the fan reading or from the reading that George did at Boscone, it really moved them enough to transcribe it so well. This collection, I'm guessing, was a collection of different notes from different people, because we're seeing on one post on Reddit, it links to another post on a different board. I forget the name. I think it's just a form of Ice and Fire, and it's to a person that was also at the con that said a lot more stuff about it and had a lot more mm-hmm. details. But like I said, it stood out to them enough to be moved by it, to remember in such beautiful details, or they really wanted to make a lot of people believe something.
I don't know. I feel like that's kind of messed up. I think the idea of a fan summary, and I know we're talking about it on the podcast, but there's just a sense of anticlimacticness. The fan summary almost feels like spoilers to me, where the sample chapters don't feel like spoilers to me. if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's because you don't earn it, right? You're not actually in his mind and going from moment to moment. It just kind of feels like it's the highlights and then a couple sentences. Like I said, those things that I pointed out, it wasn't because I was really engaged deeply with the text and pulled out these excellent points. It's because there was only a few direct quotes like that that were brought up within itself, like self-references to its own summary. So like that sort of thing was obvious. But that's what George R. R. Martin gardens within all of his books, this deep level of intricacy. Just thinking about what's happening in Marine in general, when he's setting up at the beginning of this, the first chapter, Barristan 1, when he's showing who's on the side of the or who's on our side of the fight, where they're situated, when he's talking about the trebuchets that are surrounding Marine, and he's talking about the locations of the extra Giscari legions being on the other side of the Skahazadon. We're getting this layout and info dump of the situation. He's given us the chessboard to look over and reflect on and to feel as far as we'd like to feel the contextual weight of all the emotion that all of this complexity has gathered in this place. But on top of that are all of the weird stories of all the people that are in the actual story themselves, that's complicated and mathematically set up to be in some way pleasing or displeasing, sad or really cool. There's a mix of it, a good mix of it right now, Marine. Post-apocalyptic, kind of scary. But he's just out here living hard.
Barristan is?
Oh, yeah.
This is Barristan Selmy. He is not a politician. He's not like Barristan lives to fight. This is his A game. Oh, yeah, this is his right. time. I'm excited for him because I feel like this is what he truly thrives at. And so I feel like throughout everything that he's been through in Marine, especially recently with Danny being gone, and it's just him trying to navigate through the politics and him trying to figure out what the best move is, whether they should attack or keep letting these dead men with disease come into their city gates. And those are problems that I don't think he necessarily feels like he's equipped to deal with. But you know what he is equipped to deal with is to be the first one riding out there ready to fight. That's his, you can see so clearly in all of his hype speeches and in his thought process, that's just where he shines. So I'm really happy for the guy. Even if he's making some weird decisions, I feel like he's in his element finally. But it's a complicated battle. Like there's so many different groups of people and so many different layers of politics and folks coming together that I feel like this whole chapter, to me, from my perspective, is trying to set up this idea that this battle is going to be very confusing, and not just from a perspective of us as a reader with so many different potential things happening, but from the folks who are involved with the horns, coming from many different sides, with the like Victarion joining the fray, with all these different groups that are coming together to fight for different reasons. You hear everybody yelling different names throughout this, praying to different gods. There's no real unified cause necessarily. And so I think that we're just getting set up to be thrust into a very messy, complicated battle that probably isn't going to be so great for our man Barristan Selmy.
Kind of feels that way, doesn't it? This chapter is just so perfect. And knowing that it was released in the dance paperback as well, it's just George is such a tease. He's like, by the way, there's this perfect chapter of Barristan Selmy. I've had all these chapters him prior. They were never actual POV chapters, but this one is called, you guessed it, Barristan 1. And he's basically sharpening his sword on a hillside this whole time, just reflecting on life and weighing all the things that he's learned and all the potential possibilities of his present. And I don't know, it's kind of sad that it's come to this with a lot of the decisions he's made. If there's still a little bit of that Westerosi storied swagger within him, but I feel like everyone at this point, now it being in the Winds of Winter, has everyone in the story has been brought so low that even someone as high in our minds in honor and in respect, and just in this weird lofty way we like to put the older, more wizened members of stories that we like into a certain tier. Even he is just sort of brought low and kind of normal. But he's still in this enameled armor, and he's wearing this silken cloak, and he's surrounded by people that he's trained to sort of have the same arraignment of the way a knight of his level would move about places. He's still got his lads, as he calls it, and he's still got people that are members of other groups that are leaders that hang out with him and justify him being a leader because of it, because they represent other groups. And they're like, well, I'm the top guy in that group and you're the top guy in this group. And with all the different powers, like at the end of the Dance with Dragons, all the different ways that the power has moved based on deception, but also mainly hinging around Daenerys Targaryen not being there, and then the dragons being freed, and then everyone being pissed off. It's just like hell in a handbasket. And then when people say Mirany's not, I think there's probably two groups of people, folks who have read the sample chapters and those who haven't, because I'm sure that after you've read a snippet of Barristan 1, and especially after reading the recounting of 2 and getting further into the ones that we haven't gotten into that are released, the Tyrion ones yet, you'll know that this is it. That's the representation of it, because there's literal bodies falling from the sky now. There's fire where the harpy was. It's there's people yet. The Tyrion's out here and Jorah is here and bodies are exploding. Like I said, flying through the sky. I mean, this is the moment.
Yeah. And I feel like what happens in Meereen after this, and what happens to people like Barristan and Victarion, I feel like so much hinges on this, and politically where we go from here, politically who comes out on top, whether Daenerys even ever comes back here, what this means for then the eventual march onto Westeros. It's we're in an interesting position that I feel like we're kind of coming to the end of this knot, but there's still a lot of confusion based off of all the different potential outcomes of this battle. And I feel like the way Barristan is talking and just his nature of who he is and kind of how he'd want to go out into the world, and us knowing that he's not going to make it to the end of the series, that this is one of his last major efforts. And so I feel like it can't necessarily be a good thing for quote unquote our side going into the situation here. So I'm curious to see, I mean, how we don't have too much. Yeah, we exactly. And we don't have a lot of information.
And for who?
From Barristan too, but I just think the thing that I keep thinking about is just the fact that Barristan is setting up this idea that everybody is going to know when to retreat, when to move forward, different battle tactics based off of horns blowing, and he gives the horns to this guy who
Barristan describes. It's at least kind of a plan though, right? Sorry to interrupt. It's at least kind of a plan.
It's kind of a plan, but I mean, you think about it, like he gives the horn to this, what's his name? Red Lamb, who Barristan doesn't really think very highly of. And so that's an interesting move in my mind. I just picture noise and not people not knowing where direction is coming from. And then there's no real plan. If Barristan goes down, then who's in charge after he's staged this coup? Who picks up after whatever ends up happening from this battle, you know? I feel like it's kind of an interesting, and Barristan says somewhere at the beginning of this chapter where he talks about, I'm trying to find it, how he's not really confident about anything that's going on right now.
But he's leaning on the things that he knows about and that he feels strongly in. And he has, like you said before, he has one of the most beautiful epic speeches in the series where he knocks on most of the things that you might be thinking of. And he goes into places, and George goes into places that are kind of meta, talking about surviving the battlefield. And outside, he talks about more than just surviving the battlefield. He talks about being a knight and being a person and being alive at strange times when you're asked to do crazy stuff. And he gives you just the base advice on how to get through it. And it's so romantic, how it kind of blends in with the feelings that are mostly related to the seven gods that are, or the seven ideas that are broken into seven gods. It's kind of sweet how that all worked out.
Don't you think it's interesting? Because I think he is really relying heavily on his own like Westerosi background, but, and correct me if I'm wrong, aren't most of the people that he's preaching to, isn't that a foreign concept to them?
Oh yeah, these are all, like you said, this is just confusion. And this goes back to just the overall idea of like a lot of things could happen and a lot of people are just kind of banking on something happening. And so here we go. And so that's the deal. It's kind of, a lot of this is just sort of ironic, the way that this is sort of the Barristan, the fated Barristan chapter, if he is riding into the sunset, the way that it would be happening in Meereen with the bodies flying through the sky and exploding and him leaving town and not fighting in the way that he would have actually planned at all, and not riding in with people that he knows or people that he necessarily respects at all or that necessarily respect each other. When he's talking to the widower and they're referencing rescuing Daario, it's like, I don't really think that there needs to be much of a plan when it comes to Daario, because it's just so funny because he's literally riding into battle with these guys and we know who Barristan is. And this may seem like an obvious point, but it's there for a reason, just as a last minute reminder. It all sort of is there for a reason as a last minute reminder. It's like reality itself staring back at Barristan, and in a fashion that makes us love him and has made us always love him. We haven't got to see his whole life. He takes it like such a man, just takes it in stride. And it's like, all right, well, here we go. And a part of that is also, and I'm going to admit this for everyone, is being a complete idiot. He also does that pretty well. And he looks pretty good while he's doing it.
Yeah, he definitely does.
It's so funny. And everyone's listening. He's having his speech in front of thousands of people that are watching. And everyone's using this momentum. It's like they know that something's about to happen. The knot's about to, it's about to just be pulled so hard that it explodes. I don't even know if that could happen with the right kind of rope, but here it is. Everyone's just sort of running against the door, especially the pit fighters, just yelling. They're literally living out their best lives in a way that is, it's a culmination. If this scene, if this, the Battle of Fire here was approached correctly, it would be one of the most hilarious, but also cool, action-packed, fun things to watch. So many crazy moments with these pit fighters who do ridiculous stuff. And there's also moments of really genuine emotion that have the potential to come through within all of this, because even though it's kind of silly, this is where Barristan is at the end of the day. And that is kind of crazy, but
this is a hole he's dug for himself.
He followed the Dragon Queen. She had dragons. Okay. Can you blame him?
No.
If she ever comes back. She had dragons, but the second Barristan sample chapter, or at least the fan summary, begins with his gut feels twisted from nervousness as he rides through the gates. He knows that the feeling will go away when time slows down in the chaos of battle.
I feel like those lines make his hype speeches throughout Barristan 1 more of a self pump up jam session instead of him necessarily trying to rally the folks with him. He's just trying to talk himself up. That's all he can do.
That's got to be what every real speech kind of is in the end, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe yeah. We can't all be as real and as pure as like a force of reckoning and nature as Aragorn, but I feel like, I don't know, maybe it's just so human of him to do in that way.
I think so.
And even talking about the way that the battlefield smelled like shit, maybe that that's a personal thing that he was self-conscious about, of shitting himself or pissing himself in his first fight. And he's like, by the way, don't even worry about that. You're going to need to not worry about that.
It happens to the best of us.
it seems kind of like unnecessary to mention, though, because they have bodies that are assailing them from the sky. Which is such a cold move by the young Gaii.
Well, it's smart because
friendly forces. Cold move, guys.
It's smart because I feel like it's one of those it's a mental thing, if nothing else, because we're reading about how they're not really getting that far into the city and they've got the Pale Mare.
Yeah. Which is a kind of viral infection, it seems.
Right. So
some kind of sickness.
Is that something that can be spread through them being close to the body? They probably don't know specifically back in whatever era we're meant to believe.
Everyone medicine thinks that that's how it's spread, though. That's what they think.
That's what they think.
They're scared of it just being outside of the gates, but now it's literally flying through the sky and exploding with worms and maggots, among not only the people, but the fighting men as well.
Well, I feel like more than anything, more than it being a health crisis, it's a mental crisis, because sitting there and you feel secure and you've got the upper hand, really. Bearson says some moment here, which I'm trying to find, about he said he might have held Marine for years against the Inkai, but he cannot hold it for even a moon's turn with the Pale Mare galloping through its streets. That they had the upper hand. They could have starved them out, essentially, but the mental drain of this disease being flung into your city gates, no matter how infectious, no matter how far into the city it gets, that's something that is going to force your hand into action, because who has the patience to figure out how to take care of those things, especially somebody like Barrison, who, as you were saying earlier, his gut reaction and the way he's going to handle situations is going to be the only way he knows how, which is
I think you said that earlier, actually.
Oh, wow. I'm so smart.
You're right, though.
I don't remember.
He's not suited to do it. I think Tyrion is, in a degree. It's funny because he's dealing with the sickness in the same way. And I remember him having thoughts specifically about, like, he's seeing it like, you know, all of you people are just sort of running around and yelling about Bloody Flux this, Pale Mare that. What's going on with all of you? Like, are we cleaning ourselves? What's the standard here? Are you wearing the same clothes over and over? Are you shitting, you know, 5 feet away from the tent opening? What's happening here? And Barristan, like you said, he's like, well, you know, they've started doing this, so I think it's time to go fight.
Right.
But he's also dealing with the momentum, not only of all the potential sickness that's going to overrun the city from the inside. When you think about it, the imagery of bodies exploding over the wall, and you're like, okay, well, this is how it spreads for sure now, because it's kind of, they're shooting them over the walls and they're blowing up. So maybe if just the bodies fell and didn't blow up, it'd be like, all right, we'll throw those bodies in the pile and light those bodies on fire. Mm-hmm. But they're exploding into pieces. There's hands and pieces of someone's head flying in like your little kid's window upstairs. They're going to get they're going to get the Pale Mare first. It's literally galloping through the streets at full speed. Not to mention all those weird people. You've got the Shave Pates. You've got Resnick, more Resnick, who's like, hey, listen, I've got lots of ideas about how to run the city from the inside. Don't forget me. Don't forget A Dance with Dragons. Barristan is not about it. He knows that this seems like all the momentum has shifted to this fight moving, and that he can tip the scales if he'd like. And I think he does, mm-hmm. because I think the little plan that they had, that pressure of the bodies worked, like you said. It's just they found a way to draw him and his men and their allies out into the field, which changes considerably where things were before, especially for all of them being completely under the rule and under the dominion of Daenerys whenever she swept through. And now she's not there. Now all hell can break loose. And everyone's just trying to see what happens. Like, who explodes on the other side of the door and survives?
Right. I really like this paragraph. It goes, too many foes, Ser Barristan brooded. Their numbers must surely tell against us. This attack went against all of the old knight's instincts. Marine's walls were thick and strong. Inside those walls, the defenders enjoyed every advantage, yet he had no choice but to lead his men into the teeth of the Yunkish siege lines against foes of every... I can't read. Against foes of vastly greater strength. Anyway... everything we've been saying, I just think it's interesting that while he does have a choice, he sees this as his hand being forced. And now he comes forward with this.
It's the same way he was with the horse, too.
What do you mean?
With Danny's horse. And that there was that beautiful paragraph of him being sort of a, not adorned. He'd already been adorned, but it was sort of describing if this is all a last look. And I don't think it is. I hope it's not. I hope things shift around a little bit. But it's just the regalia, the Barristan regalia. And among that was, I'm riding upon Danny Silver. And the reason it made sense was to, you know, inspire.
Right.
Inspire the men. And also, this horse also is really, you know, there's dragons around. It's used to dragons. So that works as well.
Does that mean that he thinks that dragons are going to come?
I think that it means that he's surely out here. That he's on the horse.
Definition of me out here.
I am. I've got big Mace Tyrell energy right now. And,
oh my gosh.
And all my boys are here.
Riding up the steps.
Their names are Widower, Jokin, Grey Worm's men. I think one's called Dog Meat or Dog Face.
Something like that.
Dog Fighter. Something like that. Barristan is living life right now, guys.
But even so, in that paragraph about the Silver Mare, even he knows he's being presumptuous, which is kind of interesting.
Oh, about the Pale Mare, the sickness going through town?
No. So he's talking about how he's riding Danny's Silver Mare.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I know this is presumptuous, but...
But, I mean, you know, he's like, Danny's not even here, and this might be the last fight, so I'm not gonna have all these weird hang-ups that would have brought me down before being held accountable for my actions. This will be a Dragon Dawn. But he thinks that there's a choice, or sorry, a chance, rather. When he's praying and he prays and he asks the stranger for mercy for this fight, that was real. It was kind as of real an interesting as a speech. Choice. Why do you think so?
I don't know. Isn't the stranger like not the best? I feel like of all the people you could pray to, and I know that he prays to lots of other people, the stranger is not necessarily the first person I'd be like, help me out. But
no, that's a good point. I think that he asks the father for strength and the mother for mercy.
Classic. I'm trying to find the paragraph. Yeah, the warrior for strength, the mother for mercy, the father to watch over his lads.
My lads.
Finally, he bowed his head to the stranger. You come for all men in the end, he had prayed. But if it please you, spare me and mine today and gather up the spirits of our foes instead.
I saw it as a plea to the void, the potentiality of the universe. The stranger's like that weird other. It's mm-hmm. like, what's going to happen? And he's like, just today. Stranger, if you could, I'm giving you the attention before it's time to go into things. Just for today,
maybe, covering all my bases.
Yeah, tip things in the favor of all my guys, even though I don't know them that well. This is a crazy place that we are, and it doesn't really seem like this is the hill that we should all die on. And that's the spirit I feel from his the end of the Barristan 2 fan summary when he's shouting like a crazy person about Baylor Breakspear. It's like Baylor Breakspear and Prince Makar, the hammer and the anvil. We have them. We have them. It's like, thank God it worked out this way. Thank God that the Greyjoys have arrived. Hopefully there's some really good reason why they're fighting for us. But right now it's...
Doesn't matter.
Doesn't really matter, yeah.
Take anything they can get.
So right now we have Victarion Greyjoy and his boys... Recently acquired a red priest, recently acquired a upgraded hand. My guy, honestly, out of all guys to have right now, I'm feeling big Vic energy in a real way. My guy is in the Barristan 2. He shows up when we need him the most in the Barristan 2 fan summary, not the full sample chapter. So I can't get fully excited yet, but when I learned that this is how shit was going down, this is the kind of stuff that sparks conversations between people that last off seasons or the gaps between books. And high five to George R. R. Martin for giving us Barristan 1, but also just to be a little bit vague and just general, Barristan 2, but specifically because of that. because of that. That is,
what do you think? So broad Winds of Winter question.
They are, but on what our happens? Side.
What happens? Sorry. What, like, what's the outcome? Broad strokes of this battle and Victarion's involvement in it. What does he want?
I think that he's been sent there, and what he wants is to be as useful as possible while also being as dangerous as possible. But he's under the thumb of his brother, unfortunately. So he's been sent there, maybe with his own horn. Maybe he's going to bind a dragon and take a dragon home for the Greyjoys. Or at least bag one while he's there. Or more than one. I don't know how they work exactly. Maybe it's like a one-use horn.
Better make it right the first time then.
Or it could be just one use for the person. Oh. Either way, he's now rolling in for a with a new red priest that's badass, and he's going to be fighting even harder than ever. So when we switch to his perspective, good God. The way that this first Barristan chapter comes in makes me question what chapters surround him and mm-hmm. what the momentum must be like in the Winds of Winter to get that. I just love the first stream of paragraphs. I just it's matched by most chapters in these books. It's just like he was waiting for it and he really nailed it. And I bet that the fight will be better. I bet the fight is going to be better than, like, people love to talk about Blackwater. And I'm sure that when we see what happens with the Battle of Ice, that it's going to be just as cool. But this stuff with Barrison, if it's any kind of indicator of what the fight's going to be like, and the scaly sort of, just highly decorated people that were surrounding the guy and Barristan too. I forget the dude's name. The little pigeon when he was begging for mercy. The guy who had the slaves that were herons. Here it is. They were herons on freakishly tall stilts wearing pink scales and feathers and steel beaks. Barristan sees that they will be blind because of the dawn rising of the city and like to break ranks easily, so Barristan turns away from the Legion guarding the trebuchet at the last minute and heads for the Herons. In this chapter summary, there is a lot of strategy that is put in, but I think I want to wait for the official summary to tether my emotions too much to what Barristan's decisions are in the battle. You know?
I agree.
But the imagery that I'm getting right now from those weird creatures, and it's just like this fight's going to be the one, man. I think it's going to be awesome.
You mentioned Blackwater, mm-hmm. which I think is interesting because there is talk and comparison between Blackwater and this battle specifically. And I think that you can draw lots of comparison from, like, my own personal view, lots of comparison to lots of different battles. But there are some similarities between the two. And so whatever conclusions we can draw from that, and whoever we're going to put on each side, I guess, can give us some sort of insight on what we think the outcome of a battle like this is going to be. But I just think it's interesting that, like, the trebuchets are named after ships in the Battle of Blackwater, which is like
George taking another level, that symmetry and that parallel thinking up another level. Or
like he's just a guy that, and there's only so many ship names out there, you know.
I don't know. Could you imagine if that was the case? If there was all of this,
I secretly hope it is.
Here's the thing, George, if you're listening, we all need a daddy. We all need someone. We all need someone that knows what's going on. And right now, we're all holding on to hope that you've got something in this story that we just haven't heard of yet. And this is a good time to break something like that out, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, now's the time. But I just think it's interesting that we've got such a turning point that can be compared to another major turning point in our hearts and in the books.
It's good homework, I think. I think that there's an obvious correlation between the two moments, and there's similar people involved. Sometimes it's a little bit more than similar. Sometimes it's actual. But either way, it's like we come back to the same problems, and it's funny how the different circumstances that we've gone through leading us ultimately to the people that we are when we're put in these situations in real life, it ends up being the reason why things going one way or the other. And so George, as a writer, his challenge is to build a scenario in which that is happening in his book. And it's definitely happening here on a lot of different levels. And it's satisfying how much it all crosses over.
I agree. Even if I make fun of it.
What were you making fun of?
The fact that there are similarities that I think are silly.
The names, it is kind of a heavy thing, but people like that stuff, I think.
I'm happy for everybody.
I think people like that stuff.
I'm just kind of like annoying. But here's my thing. My question for both of us to answer on the spot. Barristan making it out dead or alive.
Alive.
Because he's gonna go eventually. And I think that no matter what happens book-wise, it's going to be way more satisfying than it was in the TV show. I feel like Barristan is one of those people who really got done dirty by them in the way that his story kind of came to a really abrupt end. And so, you know, I think you were talking about this earlier, but is this his moment or does he still have time?
I'd like to see Barristan, unfortunately, be put in even more uncomfortable situations. If we're really going to bring humanity as low, maybe have Barristan go back to Westeros and be involved in some stuff that makes us respect him much less, which is sad to say, but is it really better than dying? Ooh, what an emotional twist, George. Is it better? Should he have just died a Marine? Oh, find out in the Dream of Spring.
I just kind of like this idea of him sacrificing himself when Daenerys isn't there.
Just for the story of it?
Just
for the...
It's like exactly? Because it's a bittersweet kind of thing. You know? He's stretched so far and so... Such a roller coaster to get here in every sense of the term. And then he ends up as they're so close to eventually heading back to Westeros, we assume. Isn't able to see it through. I think it's like a bittersweet kind of situation.
Does it depend on him giving up or not? Does he lose the positivity where he has the thirst, the hunger to keep going?
I don't think he's ever...
And that's why he fails? Or is he taken out by some random power that is... It's unfortunately happened to him?
I think it just gets out of his hands. I think that as we've been talking about the chaos that this battle will potentially bring, things just get out of his hand and he is put into situations that he typically wouldn't be put into and it doesn't bode well for him.
There's a moment in the fan summary where the Red Lamb says, "I came for blood, not gold," in response to the little pigeon begging for mercy. He knocks in the little pigeon's head with his mace, which for people who don't go to museums and look at the arms and armory section or Google what maces are, it's like a club with just a complicated, it's like instead of a solid head, it's a head that has a bunch of weird gnarled ends and bits and bobs. And so it's just a really heavy thing that's meant to just destroy shit when it runs into it. Which is a funny just thing if you think about someone making like what are we using to fight people with, like, well, we have swords that cut people or we have this club that is really heavy and it'll just break shit open. What do you think about that? The Red Lamb's like, that's the tool for me. He hits in the little pigeon's head with his mace, splattering blood all over Barristan and Dany's silver horse. How's that for a visual?
Barristan's crisp white and gold get up.
Just splashed starkly. And the horse as well.
It's going to be a mess.
I wonder what the Greyjoys are going to do.
Like what Victarion's vibe is. Like how is this battle going to go for him?
He's a religious man. And he's quite the one for tall speech. And he doesn't like to feel stupid.
That's for sure.
God. He better hope that everyone dies in the fight, basically, because there's so many different kinds of people in Marine.
I feel like it's a people win-win like for him, though.
Because he's, well, because he's helped out, they're going to be his friend no matter what.
Exactly. Like, he's really rolling in at the perfect time.
God.
It could not be more perfect for him.
I know, but it's, if only their voyage had been smooth sailing, if they hadn't been broken up by the storm and all that shit, then I feel like maybe we would be getting a different Victarion Greyjoy, but he's coming with a new Red Priest, this, like, strangely healed hand. It's like a weird... And I was going to say it's strange Peter Pettigrew vibes, but it's like the opposite. He's not a scared guy. He just has a really strong hand, and he really, I assume, will want to use it. So I can't wait to get a paragraph of description that describes... I can't wait to get a paragraph of description that involves him and a hand axe and swinging faster and harder and stronger than ever.
Coming in to save the day. Essentially.
Yeah, but he's not even going to be saving the day is the thing. Meanwhile, Barristan is yelling.
To Barristan, he is.
Gleefully. Yeah. We have them. We have them. They're on our side.
To Barristan, he's going to save the day.
God, it's so sweet how their reasons differ so much and how they all splash together.
Sweet?
Yeah, it is. It's the heart of the story. You know, the reason why it's so interesting to us. When I think about the weird things that Victarion Greyjoy thinks about before he lands and does this versus what we know Barristan was thinking about, what he was dealing with. And I presume that they may be face to face with one another if Barristan doesn't fall in an unfortunate way in this fight.
Well, that's the whole, and it's such a cliche thing to say, but as the story finally, eventually, slowly but surely starts to compact a little bit, and all of these different people and issues and storylines are finally converging in these major battles that are happening all across Westeros. It's thrilling.
It is. I really think that Winds of Winter is going to be awesome. I think it's going to be a lot of people's favorite, even though I know we've had years to gain these strange allegiances to the available five.
I hope so. I think George R. R. Martin's writing style continues to get better. And better. I feel like the deeper that we get into not only these sample chapters, but just as we've gone through our reading order, I feel like he is much more polished and profound. And that's an exciting prospect to me. I think that's something that can only help or only continue to get better as we meld some of these sometimes overly complicated storylines into something seamless.
I have a lot more hope after reading this.
Well, and especially and not to keep like harkening back to the TV show, but you can't help it in the wake of the last season. Here we are with these characters that either one weren't represented at all, or two weren't really given any sort of justice or real weight to them. And to see see the weight of this battle with folks that were absent from the TV show for the most part, you know, it's exciting. It's like that's why we're doing the sample chapters, because we want to, like, that's exactly why, like, those conversations have brought about us diving into these instead, because it's just like anxious for the reality.
I just don't know why we didn't have this kind of Marine for the longest time. It just feels like he just really brought the flavor of his state of mind and his point of view chapter. And of course, it makes so much sense because he's a different person in those other stories. Just like our other character, just like when Arianne is in Dorne, it's different than, like, we discussed in these first Winds of Winter sample chapters with Arianne 1 and 2. That's a different person that we met. And she's doing a whole new thing. And it's the same with Barry here. The Queen's Hand, where he was making some pretty serious decisions, was the last time that we were with Barristan, and now we're with him
in at his the own title battle. Chapter.
This is where we wanted to be with him, basically, since we met him, and now we have it. And I feel like, mathematically speaking, this chapter touched on so many things that we were wanting to be resolved, that we wanted to check back on and hear about. He did it consistently in a Barristan Selmy way, And a lot of those issues I didn't know I wanted to see through his point of view, and I really liked.
And it's his own dang chapter. Nobody else is in the title.
So, owns of the chapters.
I'm trying to think about, I don't know if I have an own for Barristan 2.
I'm going to do it.
Also, when Winds of Winter comes out, we're going to be giving different owns for the same chapters.
That's true.
Crazy.
I think that's okay. I mean, I just say bring it on.
I think it's okay too. It's just kind of funny.
You go first. Ladies first. I want to be nice.
Oh, so sweet of you.
Oh, thank you.
I'm going to give my own to this moment that is in the middle of his speech near the end of the chapter when he says, some men die in every battle, more survive. East or west, in every inn and wine sink, you will find graybeards endlessly refighting the wars of their youth. They survive their battles, so may you. This you can be certain of. The foe you see before you is just another man, and like as not, he is frightened as you. Hate him if you must, love him if you can, but lift your sword and bring it down, then ride on. Above all else, keep moving.
Yeah.
This is getting me amped.
I mean, there it is. That's some ultimate advice right there.
I'm not giving my own to Barristan too, because I don't think it counts.
Okay. That's fair. That was a good own for your first one. I feel like we can't go through this episode without reading his whole speech, but
I know.
I need you all that are listening to just go read it. It was that good. For Barristan 1, my own is to this paragraph, or it might have been two, but it pasted from my book as one paragraph. I was really struck by emotion when I read it, and I immediately was like, and I haven't felt that way in a long time. I was immediately like, this is my own. Okay. Sir Barristan turned in the saddle. Cat, Gogor, Cameron, your men will follow afoot. You are known as fearsome fighters. Frighten them. I can't read this the way that he's saying it. I would feel very silly. But also reading it sounds very silly. Frighten them. You are known as fearsome fighters. Frighten them. Scream and shout. By the time you reach the Yunkish lines, our horsemen should have broken through. Follow them into the breach and do as much slaughter as you can. Where you can, spare the slaves and cut down their masters, the noblemen and officers. Fall back before you are surrounded. Gogor smashed a fist against his chest. Gogor, not fall back. Never. It's just like, oh yeah. Deliver me those moments in a tightly well-decorated package or in a loose one. I pretty much will take them in all shapes and sizes.
I feel like I just wish that we could see him give a speech like this on screen.
Yeah, that would have been pretty cool, actually. Damn.
But you can't have everything.
That would have been a different kind of thing for people. They would have liked it for different reasons. It's sort of how the King of the North moments,
yeah,
are kind of a heartbeat raiser for a second for people. If they would have went down an unexpected path where you're like, I didn't know this was going to happen. And the music wasn't cheesy and the camera angles that were, creative, but not too creative, like not too low. And they were kind of patient and they had, like not switching to a bunch of different angles. And they had Barristan Selmy delivering this speech or a speech like it. That would have been cool for other reasons. That would have been like a different kind of cool in Game of Thrones.
Damn, yeah, it would have been legit, but it's okay. Like I said, you can't have everything. But we can whine about it.
Yeah. And my second own, because why not? I'm not afraid. The Red Lamb's voice was loud, almost to the point of shouting. Should I die, I will go before the great shepherd of Lazar, break his crook across my knee and say to him, let me try it again. Should I die, I will go before the great shepherd of Lazar, break his crook across my knee and say to him, why did you make your people lambs when the world is full of wolves? Then I will spit into his eye. Sir Barristan smiled. Well said, but take care that you do not seek death out there, or you will surely find it. The stranger comes for all of us, but we need not rush into his arms. At first, I was just collecting that first part that the Red Lamb was saying about the Shepherd of Lazar. I was like, what a haughty way to carry about your life before running into sure mortal peril. The moments of bravery are going to have to be outstanding after the moment you guys run in. You're going to be stuck in it until the fight is over, or you'll be dead. And he's like, I would spit in that guy's eye.
But don't run too quickly into the arms of the stranger.
Exactly. And then this other piece of wisdom to come after. I thought that the confidence, and I was just interested by this guy's fire. And then here comes Barristan to temper it. And it was just, well done.
You should keep reading stuff.
These owns brought to you by marijuana.
I don't know what to say.
It's okay.
I'm also distracted because I forgot to gather owns.
Really?
Yeah, but I'm there. I got them now.
Roger that. All right. So you mind sending them to me?
I just sent them to you.
Thank you. Where'd you send them?
To both emails that you own.
Oh, that's good. Got him. Those were our owns. I wish Hannah would have given an own for the Barristan 2 excerpt, or sorry, fan summary, like, but I know that
I don't think, yeah, it doesn't
she'll
count.
Be there in the future, right? You got us in the future.
I just feel like it doesn't count. Is that, am I copping out? I don't know. I don't want to do it.
I don't think that's a cop out. That's fine. I think you're entitled to your opinion.
Thank you.
Isn't that what a crazy take I just had?
About I'm entitled to my own opinion?
Yeah.
Honestly, yeah.
All right, everyone. We asked, you delivered. Time for owns. From Ben Smith at Sir Benjamin on Twitter, Barry won own to sell me for remembering what the White Bull, which is Gerald Hightower, would have said and for attacking anyway. And Barry 2 own to the Ironborn for showing the F up. Oh, an honorable mention to Selmy for the Blackfyre Rebellion reference, Baelor and Makar there at the end.
At Brendan B. Fish, the one and only, quotes, it's like Barlow, Breakspear, and Prince Makar, the hammer and the anvil. Wait, did I say it wrong?
No, I think that you copied it right, but it says Barlow instead of Baelor. I like that. It's like the Wire, Song of Ice and Fire.
Oh, yeah, that's funny. Okay, let me start over. Baelor. Got it. I knew that. Anyway.
You got to say it how it's written. I love Barlow. I
know. Putting Jeff on blast. Next from at Brendan B. Fish. It's like Baelor, Breakspear, and Prince Makar, the hammer and the anvil. We have them. We have them.
From Meyer 27. I got to reread it and get back to you.
Which I just thought was fair funny.
Fair enough. Yeah, no, fair enough.
I know you retweeted it, but I LOL'd.
No, it's good. Fair enough.
Caitlin Hess says, my son's middle name is Barristan. The show did not do him justice, so it's kind of a bummer now. The show did not do him justice, but this chapter gives us hope again.
That is an awesome middle name, by the way.
And last but not least.
From Wow Pamplona. Even now. Ooh, let's try this again. This one deserves a real shot. Even now, I could cut through the five of you like carving a cake.
All night.
Not my best, Barristan, but I'll be here until the end of the books. So you'll probably get another shot at that. I'll be old and bold, but please, George, give me your best Selmy's faith.
And that's it. If you want to send in your own,
those are your own.
If you want to send in your owns for Barristan 1 or 2, or if you want to send in your owns for any of the other sample chapters, you can find us on Twitter at Game of Owns, or on Facebook, or on Instagram at Game of Owns.
That's right. You can also send us an email to contact@gameofowns.com. I'm excited to get into all this stuff with everyone. I'm excited to be talking about Greyjoy's landing and fighting and killing people.
I know. I'm excited to get into some of those other chapters. Next, after this, Tyrion is coming up next.
Yes.
I feel like that's the next in order. So let's do yes. Tyrion next. Tyrion's coming up next. And just stay tuned into our social media and we'll tweet out when those owns are happening. But Tyrion be coming next.
By the way, I did the math and we've converted 1% of Game of Owns listeners to the new podcast so far.
the 1%. The elite.
So
I love being in the 1%.
We are on week 4 of our new podcast called It Really Makes You Think. And we're having a really good time and we'd love for you to listen to that show. So check it out if you haven't checked it out yet and subscribe to it on iTunes or Spotify or on YouTube and
come hang with us.
So got to reread it and then we'll get back to you.
We will be back in a couple of weeks and we'll be talking about the next sample chapters of Winds of Winter. We'll be getting into Tyrion. We'll stay on that Winds of Winter grind. So we will see you soon.